I'm Mike McCurdy. In this bewildering, information-drenched world, it can be difficult for people to recognize the differences between news and advertising, journalism and opinion, and bias and fairness. GLT's Colleen Reynolds caught up with Michael Spikes with the Center for News Literacy at Stony Brook University in Long Island, who is traveling Illinois to help educators with the tools they need to bring critical thinking to everything they see, read, and hear in the age of misinformation. Spikes says news literacy is about becoming an active and smarter news consumer.
When you come upon information or you watch a news program or you see something online that may purport to be news, before you go and you jump to a conclusion, after that story has ended, you really ask yourself a couple of questions. You ask yourself questions such as, what do I know at the end of this story? How do I know it? Who gave me this information? Who were the sources in that story? What may I not have heard in this story? And why I may not have known that information at the end of the story. So really, again, it's an active participation in the information that you consume. It does take a bit of work, but I think once you get into the habit of doing it on a regular basis, it becomes super easy to do. It becomes, as one teacher said to me, second nature.
How young can our students today who can understand what you're trying to teach them?
I would say it could go all the way back to primary school. We've seen in most cases that high school teachers are the ones that are mostly wrangling with the issues that we teach in our news literacy class, but we've also sort of felt that the sweet spot is middle school. Because in middle school, I used to work in the elementary school. My first job in education was actually as an elementary media specialist, also known as the librarian. And one of the things that I noticed with my fifth and sixth grade students, they were right on the cusp of development in which they were developing their own points of view or having their own way of seeing the world. And we kind of feel like that sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade period right around there, we really feel like that could be a real sweet spot of teaching news literacy because it's right at the beginning of the time when young people are starting to really find out and understand who they are as people. And we feel like putting an intervention in that includes news literacy topics that will make them more skeptical of the information that they see is something that they can carry from that point through the rest of their life.
You refer to everyone today as a publisher. Explain that and why that's important to highlight.
So one of the things we talk about in our course are open platforms, and we look at social media as one of those open platforms, such as Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, YouTube. Yes, it's true that we go to social media too. I know personally, I use my Facebook page mostly as almost like a magazine. I have liked a couple of news outlets, and most times I get a number of articles there. But also at the same time, I can also publish my own material. A couple months ago, I was doing a series of blog posts for the BillMoyers.com blog, and I was doing some promotion on my own Facebook page. They promoted it on their Facebook page, and people were able to comment on those stories. So in these realms, again, going back to the idea of these open platforms have made communication not a one-to-many, but a many-to-many system, where now we as the consumer can also create and distribute to large numbers of people. With a platform like YouTube, there is no cost barrier to entry. Anyone, all they have to have is a computer or even just a cell phone. They can create a video, put it up on YouTube for free, and that goes out to the millions and millions of people who access that platform every single day.
So with that ability comes responsibility, but not everybody is exercising that. Thus, the need for consumers to be more savvy.
Right. That is exactly what we use in the class. We use the line from the first Spider-Man movie, and we say what Uncle Ben said to Peter Parker, with great power comes great responsibility. And we have to be more aware of the fact we spend a lot of time of telling young people that you put something on the internet and it will never disappear, right? So we have to understand what our responsibility is in using these open platforms. I would definitely encourage people to use them and to utilize them because what these open platforms have done is they have given people who did not traditionally have a voice. So there are lots of things that you can find now and lots of groups of people that now you can congregate with and talk to about pieces of media that traditionally weren't out there. I know personally, I love old ephemeral films from like the 1950s and 60s, these old like newsreels and old educational films. But you're not going to find that on your cable network. You're not going to see a station with that. You can find lots of those videos on YouTube, and you find a very active community of people that are discussing these kind of videos or posting those kind of videos and so on. But also, with that being said, we've seen lots of occasions and lots of things where we've had nefarious players out there who have posted information, have posted misinformation, and have willingly put wrong things out there and have generated and created these communities where we've had folks that kind of run counter to our cultural norms, to what we understand, how we should live in a democratic society. And for all of us, we have to know what our role is, both as publishers of that information or even commenting on those kind of things, and also as consumers of that information. And we should be very mindful of what we're consuming, what we're seeing, what these things are, how we understand them to be.
And you spend a lot of time on the importance of vetting information, and that information alone is not journalism and can only be taken a certain way. It can be used to support a point of view, but certainly knowing the difference is important.
Right. One of the lessons that we teach the students, when you come upon something that looks like news, sounds like news, even something that might have an opinion in it, and we would kind of categorize it as journalistic opinion, we say make sure you put it through a V, I, and A filter. And that is, look for about pages on websites. Look for statements of purpose or mission statements from organizations that are distributing information. And then the A is accountability. And that's where we say, is the person responsible and answerable for the work they do? So is there a name connected to this information? Is there an organization that's behind that person that's writing that? And are they accountable for the information? Do they take steps to print corrections if a mistake is made? Because mistakes will be made. I mean, we're all human. Just because an outlet makes a mistake in their reporting, it does not mean that it's a mark of bias or a predisposition. It could just be, we made a mistake. And are they upfront and honest about that? So again, what we say is use that simple V, I, and A, verification, independence, accountability.
And that is more important today because of blurred lines. You talk about that quite a bit.
Yeah, we definitely talk about it. When coming back to that idea of these open platforms of Facebook, of Twitter, YouTube, and so on, we can definitely get this blurring of the lines. And when I talk about this blurring of the lines, I mean it between different categories of media. So how do I know what I'm looking at or what I'm watching? Is it journalism? Is it an advertisement? Is it promotion? Is it propaganda? Is it raw information? We talk about information that has not been vetted by any professional. So we would look at like cell phone videos, or we would say even just comments online. These are things that are just information that has been put out there by people we may not know who they are. So it becomes very important for us to think about what are the characteristics that we might see in each of these pieces of information. So for instance, one of the things we talked about in our class is something called native advertising, but they are made to look like the traditional pieces of media that are put on that particular outlet. So an example would be if you pick up your newspaper and you see a news story about climate change, what companies are doing to fight climate change. And what you see at the top is that this piece was sponsored by Shell or another oil company. That would be an example of a native ad. It looks like a news story. It was in your newspaper, but it was actually paid for by Shell. It was an advertisement. So there are many examples of this that are around. And one of the caveats that I make with this is that there may be some good information in those native ads, but it's very difficult for us to come to a conclusion based off of that one piece of media. So in this case, we would say it's a blurred line between advertisement and information that will help to inform us. So almost like journalism in a way. And we have to be very aware of that and keep our antenna up.
I'm Colleen Reynolds. You're listening to Sound Ideas, and we're talking with Michael Spikes, who is with the Center for News Literacy at Stony Brook University, but he's based in Chicago. You talk about truth, and we've heard phrases such as fake news, alternative facts, and then truth. How do you address truth in your teaching?
So in our course, one of the first things that I always say when I get ready to give our lesson on journalistic verification and the truth, as it seems to journalists, we do take a very methodical approach to understanding what the truth is in journalism, in the context of journalism. So one of the things that we say is scientists and journalists don't believe in a absolute truth. They're very hard to understand absolutes. So we do not look at the world, or journalists do not look at the world, and scientists do not look at the world in terms of black and white. Things are either or, right? One of the lines that I use many times that comes from a psychology professor on our campus that says, scientists learn to be comfortable living in the gray. We live in a very complicated world. We live in a democratic society, which is all about the debate of different ideas. But the way that we approach the truth, the definition that we use, is that it is a statement that is proportional to the evidence. And really, for journalists, I would add the words right now, because evidence that we have in front of us will present the truth as we know it right now. But sometimes we might find more evidence that might change our perception of the truth. So because of that, one of the vocabulary words that we use in the class is that the truth is provisional, meaning that as we gather more evidence, what we believe today could change tomorrow. So a prime example of this can come with the analogy we use in the class is hundreds and hundreds of years ago, people thought the earth was flat. More evidence arises, and what we believe the truth to be changes.
Some people might hear that and say, well, what about facts? Facts matter. Is what you're saying, does that run counter to that?
No, I wouldn't say that that runs counter to that. What I would say to that is we should always stay open to what the evidence will show to us. So there's the famous line from Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan that everyone is entitled to their own opinion, but not their own facts. So we all want to start from a base set of facts, and those facts should be based off of evidence. So yes, there are some things in the world where we can say, we've studied this, we've discovered X, here is the fact.
Michael Spikes of the State University of New York at Stony Brook says his institution has used the news literacy course for more than 10,000 undergraduates and makes all of the materials available to any educator. He spoke with GLT's Colleen Reynolds following a session with teachers in McLean County.